with Alexandra Robbins, and we're talking about the skull and bones. How many other secret societies, though, are there throughout the country that are also influential, or, I mean, do they not even come close, Alexandra, to Skull and Bones?
Nothing comes close. There are tons of secret societies all over the country, both college secret societies and societies that are a little bit more broad-ranging. Of course, you've got the Freemasons. They're a very powerful secret society, but I don't think anybody's quite as sinister as Skull and Bones, not with these death motifs and the skeletons and the gravestones. It's just ridiculous.
It's bizarre. It's almost like a Halloween organization, huh?
Well, that's why my book came out around October.
Now, you went to Yale. Were you in some kind of sorority or some kind of secret society yourself?
I was in one of the secret societies, and this is another reason why I think members of Skull and Bones were willing to talk to me.
You were in one.
What was that?
You were in one? I didn't know that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was in a secret society called Skull and Key. It's often mistakenly lumped together with Skull and Bones because of its prestigious alumni.
Yeah. Somebody on your other line, your phone's being tapped.
Yeah, did you hear that? I'm echoing.
They clicked in and clicked out.
Yeah, I'm echoing. That was really strange. And
someone is in the house, Alexandra.
Okay, you asked me if I was afraid before. Now I think maybe I am. But anyway, okay, back to Skull and Key. It's probably them tapping my line because they don't want me to talk about this. Skull and Key does not have Skull and Bones sort of power agenda. It's basically a society about friendship and debate and literature. But because I was a member, Skull and Bones don't know what we did in Skull and Key. So they basically felt that Skull and Key was a kindred society. So when I told them that I was a member of Skull and Key, they felt that I would have sort of more of an insight into their society, that I'd be able to put what they said into context. However, since my book came out, I can't get anybody in Skull and Key to talk to me. I've been blown off by the leader of the society. This is fine. I was really only in it because there was a refrigerator in the basement full of free beer. And, you know, when I was a senior in college, that was my priority. But apparently I'm no longer a member of Skull and Key. That's fine with me, but...
Well, you know, at one point, it was, I thought, somewhat aligned to Skull and Bones. Do you remember the name Dean Acheson?
Oh, of course. He's one of Skull and Key's most prominent members.
Absolutely.
Cole Porter, Benjamin Spock, Gary Trudeau, Paul Mellon, and several Rockefellers. However, Skull and Key is probably lumped with Skull and Bones because it's Yale's second oldest society. It's probably pretty close in terms of prestige level at the school, but we don't have this influence in the government, and we certainly don't have, you know, I say we, it's probably they now because I guess I'm no longer a member, but there's no network. There's no, if you call up a fellow member of Skull and Key, they have to give you a job. There's none of that.
Has anybody ever done any research that simply says that Yale University pumps out more chief executives, more politicians, more leaders than any university, and has this high percent? Or if you just looked at Skull and Bones by itself, you'd see something very unusual there. I wonder if there's ever been a study on that.
That's a good question. I do know that there have been three presidents, Taft, Bush, and Bush, and could be four with Kerry coming up, who were undergraduates at Yale. All of them were members of Skull and Bones. I think that's interesting. Oh, people ask me why Bill Clinton wasn't a member. He wasn't eligible because he went to Yale for graduate school. He wasn't there as an undergrad.
What state are you in, by the way? I'm not going to ask you the city for your own safety purposes.
It's okay. I'm in Washington, D.C.
Okay, you're in Washington. So you're in the power seat right there.
Yeah. It's a good place to be given my investigative bent.
I mean, that was definitely a sound of somebody trying to pick up your phone.
Now you're really scaring me. What time is it? It's
Are you in a house, a townhouse, or what?
Yeah, I'm in an apartment.
One level?
Yeah.
Well,
I can see the whole place from here.
Oh, this is great. A live situation where someone's going to muffle you and my phone will go dead.
Wow, this would be great for your show, huh?
It would be great for my show,
for me.
But not for you.
Right.
We don't want any harm to come to you.
We don't.
No. But if they would just lunge and pull you down now and get you off, that would be fine. I'm kidding.
Oh, terrific.
I'm kidding. But I've never had that happen before like that.
Me neither.
Stranger things have happened.
I suppose.
As you look at where this country is headed militarily with the situation in the Middle East, and a lot of people who are from Skull and Bones are also in high-level corporate positions, do you sometimes get the feeling that whatever's happening is being done for economic reasons and that this Skull and Bones has other interests as opposed to just trying to solve some problems of this country?
Oh, it's a possibility. I don't believe that Skull and Bones exists at all to help solve the problems of this country. It's a self-serving organization to help elevate its members' status.
You believe just that totally? That's all they're there for?
Yeah. Otherwise, like the other societies, like Scroll and Key, they would donate to the community or give something back. But members of Skull and Bones told me over and over again, no, we don't give anything back. Bones exists for bones, and that's it.
Do you think the president or the head of Skull and Bones could pick up the phone right now and get to the president? Is it that easy?
I don't know if he could get to him at 3:15 in the morning, but he'd probably get a call back the next day.
Well, even that's pretty dramatic, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
How many members do you think there are right now?
Probably about 800.
800 living members. Is that big or small compared to other secret societies?
Well, compared to it's on par with the other Yale secret societies. Compared to the Freemasons, it's tiny. And compared to other kinds of groups across the country, it's tiny, which makes it all the more unbelievable that they have so many members in power and that they could have two of their members running against each other in a face-off for the presidency. That's just unbelievable.
I have always heard that once these Skull and Bones members graduate, that they are also given a pretty darn good cash stipend to get them on their way by the Skull and Bone Society. Have you heard that? Did that come up at all in your investigation? How much money?
Of course, I've heard that rumor. It's probably the reason why if Skull and Bones had chosen to tap me when I was at Yale, I would have accepted right away. They're supposed to get a $15,000 graduation gift. However, it's not true. In fact, I spoke with a fellow member of George W. Bush's 1968 Skull and Bones class very recently, and he said he's still waiting for his.
Well, maybe some, though, did. How did the rumor start? Do you know?
Skull and Bones probably started it itself as an incentive for juniors to sort of be more attracted to the organization. You don't get a $15,000 graduation gift handed to you at the end of your year in the tomb. You do get money and power and connections through other means. For instance, when Bush formed Arbusto, his first oil company, a Bonesman put together more than $500,000 for him, and of the 28 investors who contributed to that fund, one of them, also a Bonesman, put together almost $200,000. That's much more valuable than a $15,000 graduation check.
Well, absolutely. Now, the Rockefellers, were they ever in this? I know you mentioned a few on the other organization, the one you were in, but have they been in Skull and Bones?
I think Percy Rockefeller was a member of Skull and Bones. I think there might have been a couple.
Well, it's a pretty darn good. What's the tuition like for Yale University now?
Oh, what is it now? Upwards of $30,000 a year.
And that's just, is that room and board too? Is that everything or just to go to school?
I think that's everything.
$30,000 a year.
I hope that's everything. That's just exorbitant.
Maybe that's $30,000 a year.
Right, a year.
Is that what it is? 30
yeah.
A year, you think?
Oh, yeah, a year.
Oh, not for the 4 years.
No, oh, no. No, it's expensive to go to that school, and I think that's why we see only certain kinds of people dominating the campus and only certain kinds of people getting into organizations like Skull and Bones.
What's the campus look like? Just kind of describe it for me.
Oh, gosh, there's Gothic architecture. There are gargoyles stamped all over the place. It's very old-looking, and it's interesting because Skull and Bones sort of epitomizes Yale's image. Yale likes to present itself as an institution that's far, far older than it is. For example, in the early 1900s, when they were restoring some buildings, they chose a particularly weathered quarry from which to form the new building so that the school would look older. And now when windows are broken, for example, instead of replacing the windows, they instead choose to patch them up medieval style to make Yale seem older. That's basically what the campus is like.
What do you think would have happened to you, Alexandra, if somehow you were able to get into that during a ritual in costume? Maybe you would have been wearing a devil's outfit like they were, and nobody knew it was you. If they had found out, what do you think they would have done to you?
Oh, good Lord, I don't know. In the movie The Skull, the journalist got in and they killed him. So, but I should say I've never been inside the Skull and Bones tomb. Although my descriptions of the inside of the tomb make it seem like I have. I would never give Skull and Bones any sort of fodder to come after me for trespassing or whatever, so I haven't been inside.
Is it a scary-looking building from the outside?
Oh, absolutely. Students walk much more quickly when they walk by that building, especially at night, because you can't avoid it. It's on the way to classes and bars and parties and libraries. It's a very creepy place.
Has anything ever happened to a member while they were going to the secret society? I mean, has anybody ever been murdered or been hurt or anything like that that you might know of?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'm also curious about, recently, 4 Yale fraternity members were killed in an accident, I think coming back from a pledge activity. I'm curious as to whether any of them were members.
Well, you know, you're right. I don't think I have heard the name of the organization that they were from or the society.
Deke. I don't know if this is true or not, so don't quote me on this, but I believe it was Deke, which was Bush's fraternity.
Deke. Okay, Deke. Now what's the difference, though, between Deke and Skull and Bones?
Oh, Deke is sort of a rowdy.
Just a typical college type thing.
Oh yeah, it's just a fraternity. They're the guys who typically like to haze each other the most, and they were the most inebriated house on campus. But they were just they're harmless. They're a fraternity, not a secret society.
All right. So at Yale, then you did have your typical college fraternities where kids went out there and they got drunk on beer and they did whatever they did and they got rowdy.
Oh,
but then
sure.
You also have this secret society, which was then different.
A very different dynamic. In fact, on Tap Day in April, when all of the societies tap their members, you look around campus, you'll see people walking around in strange robes, intoning weird chants. It's a very weird night at Yale. You'll see some pretty bizarre things.
Well, again, in Eyes Wide Shut, the guy in the middle there was doing some weird chants.
Yeah.
I mean, strange things that go on in this country. What's even weirder, though, Alexandra, is that so many people who are in positions of power would go through rituals like that. Could we all chalk it up to, hey, they were college kids, come on?
Oh, no, I think it's much more than that. Skull and Bones is very intent on reminding the new members who has passed through those walls before. So members are reminded that, you know, someone like Bush, someone like Kerry would have done the sexual history. They would have done used the coffin in the wedding ceremony, perhaps. They would have gone through these weird initiation things. They would have worshipped the goddess. And if that was okay for all these prestigious members who have graduated in the past, then the new members sort of feel this sense of continuity, and they want to continue the traditions because it's been so successful before.
Well, what would have happened to a candidate or a member at the time who's 21 years old, and he says, well, I never had any sexual history with anyone. I mean, would they laugh at him, or would he lie about that to make himself sound better?
Probably either one, or they'd make him, I'm just guessing, maybe they'd make him talk about his masturbation experiences instead. But they even have special names within the society that relate to sexual experience. A few of the nicknames in Skull and Bones are passed down. There are three ways to get a name. You're either assigned one, you're passed down a name from a previous member, or you get to choose your own. But 4 people don't have any choice. That's Long Devil, which is the tallest member of the society,
mm-hmm.
Little Devil, which is the shortest member, Magog, which is the member with the most sexual experience, and Gog, which is the member with the least sexual experience. William Howard Taft was a Magog. I was told that George Bush Sr. was a Magog as well.
They've taken a lot of these names from the Book of Revelation. That's scary.
And Tristram Shandy, Lawrence Stern's book. There's a lot of names from there as well.
I mean, it's bizarre. Now, the people who have since gone on to get other high-level jobs and careers in politics and stuff like that. Do they ever come back to the tomb? Is there an outing? Do they ever get together with membership? Or is it is that it?
No, that happens on several occasions. Alumni are welcome, or patriarchs, I should say, as they call them, are welcome to come back to the tomb on certain nights for presentations. It was said that National Security Advisor McGeorge Bundy would come back to the tomb and talk frankly about national security issues and about other members in the administration. George Bush Sr. came back for an alumni function. There are, I think, two functions within the tomb besides initiation that our alumni are particularly invited to come back to. One of them is called the Annual Convention of the Order. I think that's the one in 1998 during which George Bush was a featured speaker. Prescott Bush, George Bush's father, would go back to the tomb, five or six times during the year. Also, Skull and Bones owns a private island. It's called Deer Island.
They own an island?
They own an entire island. It was given to them, I think, by a member of Skull and Bones at the turn of the 20th century. So they've owned it about 100 years or so. And this is where they congregate. They have reunions there. They meet over the summer. That's the spot where the members of Skull and Bones can introduce the families to each other, because families and spouses and children, they aren't allowed within the tomb. So they meet on this island. It's been conjectured that perhaps this is where some sort of eugenics movement has taken place. I don't know about that. I do know that someone like John Kerry, who his first wife was the sister of a member of Skull and Bones, his second wife was the daughter-in-law of a member of Skull and Bones. That's the kind of place where he might have come across those women.
How many presidents from Skull and Bones? Of course,
three
we know
so
of
far.
Two. Three.
Right.
That's pretty dramatic, I think.
For this tiny organization, absolutely.
Three presidents. Okay, there was the two Bushes, and who was the other one?
Taft.
Okay.
And you have two Supreme Court Chief Justices. Oh, good, my phone's getting tapped again. Did you catch that?
I heard that.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Huh?
But, here it is again.
Yeah, you're back in again.
Yep. They're listening.
They're in the house.
Stop saying that.
Well, I mean, it sounds like... How many phones do you have in your place?
Two.
Well, and where's the other one?
Not within eyesight. Now you're really scaring me.
Is it like in another spot? I mean, where are you right now?
I'm in my dining room.
Dining room/living room/all-purpose room. All right, so I assume the other phone is in the bedroom.
Yeah, but now there's no way I'm going in there because you have me spooked.
Well, that's what the show is all about, Alexander.
Yeah, thanks.
You didn't think we were just going to talk about Skull and Bones, did you, without scaring the daylights out of you?
Well, I guess I thought wrong.
Well, but we're not the ones picking up your phone.
I know. I hope.
You'll be okay. Yeah, but you sound like a toughie. 26 years old. You've been around, haven't you?
I'm pretty buff. I can take them.
You're not afraid?
Not afraid.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Puppy dog.
Uh-huh.
Hey, I'm going to open up the phone lines for the next hour and a half. There are a lot of people who are sending me emails. They want to talk with you. You ready for that?
Sure.
Okay, we'll do that. And don't forget to go to her website, secretsofthetomb.com. It's all linked up with coasttocoastam.com. It's there. Read up on it. And that's what I'll do. Do something a little differently. Let's open up the phone lines right now for you. Give you an opportunity to talk with Alexandra Robbins about Skull and Bones while she has a chance to walk in there and see what that other phone is like. Make sure there's nobody in her house. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.